Yes, people. Welcome to the What's Going On podcast. I'm Chua, and today I'm joined by Borja Tobar, Global Head of Expansion at the Spanish club Real Betis. Thanks for joining us, Borja. How are you doing?
All good. All good. Thank you for inviting me, Chua. Pleasure to see you again, especially wearing that shirt.
Yeah,
looks amazing on you.
Right. I have a soft spot for Real Betis, I can't lie.
I'm happy you're telling me this. I keep on hearing this, and that means we're doing our job well.
Yeah, you guys are clearly doing something right.
No, it looks good. Funny enough, I'm wearing the red, which is our rivals, right? Sevilla.
Yeah, man, I got some beating at the office. Well.
Yeah.
I see the beautiful kits in the back.
Yeah, we don't only have football, we also have basketball. And
I see that, the middle one.
Yeah, not many people know that about the club. We also have football sala, we got a basketball team. And here at the Madrid office, a small office. Yeah. A lot of green.
A lot of Spanish clubs have that, though, right? Even Barca, Real also have like basketball teams.
Not that many.
Or maybe not.
Not that many. Mm. No, not that many. Barca, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid left that. They used to have this. Alaves, which is owned by another group called Grupo Baskonia. They have their strong team is actually the basketball team. Valencia, but Valencia is not exactly linked to the club. It's not the same logo, not the same shield, but it's got some management intersections. There's not that many.
Okay. Interesting. But let's get going. I was wondering if, just to start us off, if you could give, the audience a little introduction to who you are and, tell us a little bit about your professional journey so far.
Yeah, sure. I'm Borja. I was born in Marbella, Malaga. I'm Spanish. I used to go to a university where I met our good friend Chua. I studied business. I always wanted to work for the football industry, for the sports industry, especially football. I've always been a big football fan and player. And at that moment, we're talking about 10 years ago already, time passes by. We really didn't know what working for the football industry could be, right? I was speaking to my parents, to my colleagues, to teachers, even at university. And especially in Spain, things started to develop in the football industry. And this gave certain opportunities for young people like me to step into the industry. So I started off working in an agency quite recognized here in Spain called Youth for Sports. I liked it. It was my first experience, my work experience in football. That was more sports. But then I passed on to consulting, had to try the other side, right? What I really studied for. I kept on trying to sell projects in the sports industry. And one day my boss sent me down and he's like, listen, you're doing a great job, but if you really want to do sports, why don't you just try it? Right. So I did a small master's, that La Liga was doing at that point. And, the best grade, got, internship in La Liga, in one of the clubs. And I got the best grade, so I got the opportunity.
So La Liga were hosting the Masters, or how did that work?
La Liga hosted the Masters,
Okay. And it wasn't VI or anything?
No. It was a law firm that has its own sort of Masters line of study. And and La Liga stepped in with that law firm to do a specific Master in sports management. They offered me a few clubs, but I said I wanted to go into La Liga because at that point they were just developing their whole international strategy and department. So I thought I was a good fit there due to all my international background, and I could really help it. And it was really where I wanted to go. And they offered it to me. So I came into the international area of La Liga. This was 2017. And I was working there for 5 years. I developed within the international area, and I ended up as the manager for Latin America. I managed a team of nine that were delocalized. They were they live abroad, so La Liga they wanted to expand really fast, try to catch up on the Premier League, right? So what they did was send 45 young people, young workers, to different parts of the world. So there were 45 workers around the globe working for La Liga wow. and opening the markets. Obviously, this makes everything go faster. And the team in Madrid, we managed certain geographic areas, and we managed the teams that were abroad. So I managed the Latin America team. And yeah, it was a great experience. Then I went on to manage as well the North America team, which was more of an office. So it was a different type of management because obviously decision making was happening there, but I was their connection in Spain. And then after this, I had the opportunity to stop thinking only in a certain geographical area, but step into a club and manage the whole internationalization of it. And that's where Real Betis came in, a club that I always enjoyed watching. I always followed. It's a club that here in Spain, a lot of people love. I can see not only in Spain,
even outside Spain,
even outside Spain. And yeah, it's a challenge after 5 years working in La Liga, but it's something that if you want to work in the industry, you can't only think about the league. You also have to see the other side and a bit more of the reality of football and step into a club. And that's where I am now. And that's me for now. I'm only 29, so I still have a lot ahead of me. but yeah, hopefully this is just the beginning.
Fascinating journey. But could you tell us a little bit more about your role at Real Betis as head of global expansion and what it entails and some of your goals in that role?
Yeah. So this all began because I don't know if you heard, La Liga has sold 8% of their future audiovisual rights to a investment fund called CVC for the next 30 years. It's called, they call the program La Liga Impulso. So what they're trying to do is impulse the clubs, right? So 5 years ago or 6 years ago, internationalization and other strategic lines of La Liga were pushed, and we wanted to break the gap with the Premier League. But now the league has realized that it's not only the La Liga Premier League gap, it's also the club's gap, right? So they get into this agreement with CVC, 8% of the future audiovisual rights for the next 30 years. Are injected now for all the La Liga clubs, first and second division. And La Liga clubs can spend this money in different ways. So you have 15% that can go directly to the transfer market. Another 15% can go directly to cover debt. And the lasting 70% has to be destined to three strategic lines, either facilities, we're talking about stadiums, we're talking about training facilities, digitalization, and internationalization. So this all of a sudden means that clubs in Spain 2-3 years ago did not have the budget to refurbish their stadium or build a new stadium, just like Betis, for example, is doing now. They didn't have the budget to digitalize their whole fan engagement. And they didn't have their budget to think abroad. They were just thinking on local and the basic operations that would cover their costs to live, practically. No? So this money that has been implemented now in the clubs has allowed the clubs to think bigger and to be more ambitious. And that's where I step in. And really my role in Betis is to start setting the base of how Real Betis has to be perceived internationally, try to grow our fan base, and try and set some content distribution and communication lines internationally that will allow us to have this presence internationally that currently has not been had. Lots of people think, how is Real Betis not an international club? And really, if you come into the operations of the club 2 years ago, it is true that things when, for example, Real Betis last season, right, they won the Copa del Rey. Obviously, this has an international impact, right? But does this mean Real Betis has been week after week trying to connect with certain markets where the club might be well perceived or might want to grow commercially in order to increase their presence, in order to increase their brand awareness in that market, no, I can answer that question. It's a no, right? So it's quite of a hard job, because what you're trying to do, you're more of a transversal position, and you're trying to make the whole club operations go international. So you try that the press work goes international. You try that the social media work goes international.
Does that include like translating and all of that?
It's not only translation, but also closing these agreements with, for example, let's talk about Marca here in Spain, right? What are the big media outlets in Middle East, if that's where we want to grow, right? Do we have connection with them? Do we speak their language? Do we know what they're like? Mm. Do you know what their calendar is? What are the important moments in a calendar year for the Middle Eastern fan base? We don't know. So I would really engage in with them, which in our club, in our team, which of the players are better perceived in different markets? It's a lot of questions that normally clubs don't sit down and try and answer themselves. And it's really, really my job is more like I see my job as a consulting job, right? Obviously, I'm in the club. But maybe in 3-4 years, I've done my job, and the club's operations are completely international. And every time someone sits down and wants to prepare an action or a strategy, they can think about national and international. And, you know, everyone has all the resources to play with to be able to connect with those markets. But today, these connections have not been created, and yeah, that's really my job at the moment. And and obviously, we work with KPIs, with certain KPIs that we try and complete for the end of the season. So, for example, this is number of followers on social media, number of digital actions in different markets, number of even exactly, yeah. So we try and set these to demonstrate our growth. And it is true that all this work, especially in a club, that this is the biggest difference I think I'm seeing in working in an international department in a league versus a club. Everything you do internationally has to have a commercial focus. And when I mean a commercial focus, it means that if I'm growing in a specific market and I'm doing, let's say, a specific digital project with, let's say, influencers from Middle East again, or Brazil, or whichever, whatever the result is has to help me have a better commercial position in the market. So the commercial team can go out there, touch brands and say, hey, you know, I'm not only national, I'm not only Spanish, but I have an operation in Brazil as well, right? And these are the results of my engagement with the Brazilian market, which means I am a brand that has something to say in your market, and that your brand can join my brand so we can both grow in the market. That's really the conversations we're trying to look for as a result of all the international work we're doing.
Okay. So, yeah. So what actions then, or steps would you say are being taken then by, you know, by you guys to expand this fan base? Is it mainly, you know, creating these relationships with, you know, different broadcasting and media agencies, or promoting a specific player who's popular in that region? Or like, what are some of the kind of concrete actions or steps, you know, in order to grow, you know, your fan base in Latin America or Scandinavia or Middle East and so on?
So the first thing we did when I arrived was analyze where we had to go, right? Because obviously La Liga goes to 45 markets, as I explained before, right? But club has to be more humble and has to understand that we're not completely global. We don't have all the resources, and we have a calendar year that is complicated to manage throughout the season. So, for example, in the next following weeks, we're playing games mid-season and end of the week as well. This means the whole club operations are focused on the match day. So it's quite complicated to get ahead of ourselves. So we had to be humble, and we had to say, okay, where should we focus our growth internationally? And we did this analyzing three sides of the club. We analyzed the current international presence we have with different sports projects. I'll get into this now. With our current sponsors and our fan bases that we have there, because we do have a thing called Peñas in Spain, which is fan communities, okay? So it's people that get together, not only nationally, but internationally, wherever they are, and they're all Betis fans, and they get together, and maybe it's 10 of them, maybe it's 60 of them, but they become a peña, okay? And they are a fan collectivity of your club wherever in the world they are. So we have 30 internationally, people that get together and watch the Betis games together in different parts of the world, and they watch our matches. So we had to analyze where we were currently, right? We also had to analyze where we could reach through our social media and our TV audiences. Where do people follow us more digitally or through TV? And where could we have more influence? And the influence side is where the players step in. Not only the current players, but also the past players as well, right? Because nowadays we're seeing the whole influencer movement, no? Young communities, they think more of who than of what, right? So, for example, when Messi moved from Barca to PSG, the amount of young people, young kids that were wearing the Messi shirt with PSG that but probably 2 months before wearing the Barca one was incredible.
Yeah. Right?
So really the influences of the football world are the players and the ex-players, depending on the type of target market you're touching, because we don't only have to think about young people, we also have the older people. No? So we do have a lot of international ex-football players and current players in the team of Betis, and we also had to analyze that. So seeing all of this...
Joaquin is a popular one.
Yeah? Yeah, Joaquin is a very popular one. But funny enough, Joaquin did not appear in our analysis because he's not entirely international, right? But Joaquin,
yeah, it's more in Spain, right? I feel like abroad he's not really that well known, but in Spain he's a cult hero almost.
Yeah, Spanish speaking markets he is very well known, very well known. But yeah, we also have to think. We know Joaquin is huge for us, and he is one of the reasons Betis has experienced such a growth in the past years, because not only on the personal side and on the humoristic side he's a legend, but I think on the playing side as well, right? The guy is 41 years old, and when Manchester
he doesn't look it
when Manchester United came to play the second leg of Europa League at the Benito Villamarín Stadium, the first 15 minutes of Betis leaded by Joaquin. I'd recommend you, I know you're a big football fan, to watch that. The first 15
minutes.
Yeah,
watch it. I'm a massive United fan. So,
are. So.
Yeah, that's my main team, ahead of Betis. So I was supporting United, obviously.
That was a tough game.
Yeah, he was on fire. He was destroying United those first 15 minutes.
Those first 15 minutes, you could not say, like, I was with a couple of partners at the stadium, and he was like, but how old is this guy? He's like 41 years old.
Yeah, he looked 27.
And the guy, he gave, like, a couple of clear goal passes. He hit the post in one incredible shot he did from the outside of the area. He started, well, it was incredible. The first 15 minutes, the problem is he's only there for 15 minutes, right? So we have to start thinking ahead of Joaquin as well. So it's not only Joaquin, that's something as well that inside the club is a big mentality. Joaquin has done a lot for us, and he will always be with the club, but we have to think away from
that. Yeah, for sure.
So we analyzed this and we came out with certain strategic markets we had to cover. And we came with 11 international markets, which is where we're focusing at the moment. We have a couple of in Asia. We have 4 in Middle East, and the rest are in America, especially Latin America, which is where we focus. And that's where we're focusing our actions. Depending on the maturity that we perceive, because there's another analysis we do of how mature our brand is in each one of these markets, we try and work different type of actions. So, for example, in Asia, obviously, we have to be in Japan and in China. It's markets that any European football club that wants to become international has to try and be in those markets. But how well perceived or how well known is the Betis brand in these markets, right? So we did an analysis and we realized that maybe some people can recognize the green of Real Betis, the Joaquin of Real Betis, the fact that we're from Seville. But there are many other people that just know we're a La Liga team, if so, right? So what kind of actions do we have to do there to become well-known? Well, it's purely communication and content distribution actions, right? We have to tell our story. We have to let people know who we are. So we have to connect with the big media outlets, the broadcasters, and to the big press influencers, and try and get our our name out there and our story out there. So that's the kind of work we do there. We have the other side of the spectrum, where is our brand not only very well perceived, but where could we say we have a Betis community going on, right? Which is the other side of the spectrum. And we realized both in Mexico and Chile, we have active peñas, we have sponsors, we have sports projects, we have a great audience numbers, we have great social media numbers. So, hey, we're actually an influential brand in these countries, right? So we don't only have to work and carry on working the whole communication aspect of all of this. We also have to do digital activations. So we have to try and engage with the whole of our fan base there and try and let them know that as much as they're away, we're really close to them, right? So we try and do special draws of shirts, of trying to do meet and greet with players digitally. We do live pre-matches to connect with these fan bases abroad. So they feel they're closer to us as much as we're away. And then obviously in the East, Mexico and Chile, we try and go a step further, which is try and do things physically at the market, right? Try and make that our fan base gets together, right? Try and travel there with the first team to play pre-seasons like we did in Chile, like we're going to do in the near future in Mexico. We're going to be there in August. So in these markets, we try and go a step further and try and take Real Betis experience to the country. And this is really what we're working on now.
Why do you think, for example, Mexico and Chile are markets where you're so popular? Do you think it's because of players you've had from there? Like you guys have Andres Guardado from Mexico, for example. I'm guessing that's kind of a key factor. Same reason we see the likes of Tottenham Hotspur being popular in Korea, right? Having someone like Heung-min Son. So that's obviously, I think, maybe one way to kind of grow in a market, right?
It's not only one way, but it's the first step. It's very hard to grow in a market and to become such an influential brand in a market if you don't have a big link with the market like a player actually gives you, right? It's very hard. I don't think we can say 4 or 5 sports brands in the world that can be very influential in a market but have never had a player playing for their side from that market. It's very, very hard.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, especially for a club size like Betis, medium size, no? So Chile, we have not only Claudio Bravo, which is the captain of the national team, but we also have Pellegrini. Pellegrini is our coach. Pellegrini has been followed by the Chile Federation to become the Chile national team coach for many, many years. I mean, he trained Real Madrid, he trained Malaga when Malaga were about to do great things in Champions League, Villarreal that did great seasons there, Manchester City, West Ham. So he's been a very well-recognized coach in Europe. And throughout his career, he's been very, very followed and loved from Chile. And he landed in Betis. And then Andres Guardado, obviously as well. But if you see the three of them, especially Pellegrini and Guardado, it's not only that they are part of your squad for one season, two seasons, it's what they talk about your club. I think that's the most important side of it. Because Andres Guardado has publicly said that he wants to retire in Real Betis. And when you interview him and you talk to him about the city of Seville, about Betis, everything he says, you know, everyone who follows Guardado and listens to what he has to say from the city and from the club, the way he says it, automatically they become Betis fans. And I think that's the most important part. And you put a very good example of Tottenham with Korea and Son, right? And Son, he's been playing for so many seasons there. And he has publicly said that he is very happy and he wants to carry on.
He loves the club.
He loves the club. He loves what it represents. And he loves everything that's going on there. And he doesn't want to move. So this is what makes Korean people want to follow Tottenham Hotspur. It's if my idol Son is such a Tottenham fan, how am I not going to be a Tottenham fan, right? And yes, if the Tottenham club has given so much to Son, they're giving me as well. You know? So this is this is the kind of link that begins the opportunity to become a brand, but it doesn't make you a brand, right? That's you have to grab that opportunity and you have to create a fan base, identify them, communicate with them, adapt your communication with them so they know you care about them. And traveling there, I think, is also a very, very important part of it because, yeah. Again, we can say it with Betis, but we can do it with the Tottenham example you put as well. Tottenham has been to Korea a few times.
Yeah, they were there this summer.
There you go. And that makes the Korean people love them even more. So when we went to Chile, I was there and it was incredible. It was incredible. How many Real Betis shirts were there? How many we actually sold when we were there? The love we received from the country was incredible. So it's not only, it's a very important side of it, the player, but it's the work you do around it that makes you an influential brand. Yeah.
And from your experience, have you seen like football clubs sign players, you know, because of the country they come from? For example, let's say there's a Spanish player and there's an American player at the same level. Do you think Betis, if they want to grow in the US, would you sign the Spanish guy or the American guy? Like does this come into the equation of signing players?
I think my answer is going to be the answer that anyone gives you in the industry, and I think no one from the sports side today will publicly say that they have signed a player because they will maybe open a market for them. You can't really say this. You will never find someone doing it. Do you actually do it? Yes. I can tell you this is something that does happen. And I can tell you because I'm not on the sports side, right? But no one on the sports side will tell you this is actually happens. Mm. We've seen this in Spain a few times with Asian players. I think it was 5 years ago or 6 years ago. All of a sudden, there were some Spanish teams that were bringing Asian players. I think it was from South Korea. We have from Japan, China. There were a few players coming along from different markets, and I can personally tell you this: what happened was exactly what you said. Okay, I need a centre back, and I need it with these characteristics and of this level. Could this mean that maybe in one of the markets where we have to grow, there could be an interesting player that fits in my economic possibilities? Yes, let's compare it to the other options. Do you want to go ahead? Yes. But obviously the sports side will always think about the sports side first. And this we have this this discussion with them, for example, when we go for pre-seasons, right? Coaches and the whole coaching team are very careful with pre-season because pre-season can dictate the whole season. So they don't want to think about business. They don't want to think about fan engagement. They don't want to think about growth. They want to think about It's not their job. And they want to think about the season. But obviously, this is a very complicated discussion because we are there for 1 week, right? So we got stuff to do in that week and we have to make the most out of it. But obviously, the coaching side is like, no, I have to train. And then the players have to rest. And then, it's a bit of a discussion. So my answer is yes, it happens. But the sports side will always say no, and it's a big discussion we have there. Hopefully in the near future, the business side can sit with the sports side and these decisions can become more common.
Okay. And I also want to touch on your time at La Liga, where you worked for 5 years. You're driving business development in Latin America and North America. Mm-hmm. What would you say were the biggest challenges you, both personally and La Liga as a whole, experienced in those regions?
Well, personally, I'd definitely say managing such an experienced team, and especially doing it delocalized because they lived there. This was tough because obviously you don't have a proximity with your team. And we're talking about people that are very experienced because opening a market is not easy, and being by yourself in a market, it's definitely not easy. Right. So we're talking about people that had a lot to say of how things should be done in that market. But obviously you had the other side, which is we're a company. It's an association, but we thought as a company is. And this is the way we should do things. But obviously the other side says, well, you want to do it this way, but if you want to grow here, you have to do it this way. And it becomes a little bit of a complicated management of people. Definitely learned a lot from it. It was a great experience, and great things were done. But there was also the personal side of the management, because obviously these people, young guys like you and me, they were living by themselves in different markets. And right. You also had that personal management, which is pretty tough. But I'd say that on the personal side. And then on the professional side, I mean, you know, arriving to a country and all of a sudden trying to explain what La Liga was doing in, let's say, Colombia was very complicated. No one understood. Like, but what, La Liga? But what, aren't you in Spain? What are you doing here, right? So I think that was the first professional barrier you always found, because you had to get out there and let everyone know. We're talking about the whole business community that you were there. We're talking about agencies, brands, communication outlets, influencers, broadcasters, even governments. We're talking about business associations. Like, everyone had to know that we were there and we were there to stay. So there was a lot of breaking at the beginning of making people understand what our objectives were. And then when you looked at numbers and you tried to grow, obviously you wanted to be very, very active, and you wanted to do things really fast. And obviously that had a lot of impact, but you not always managed to get the results, right? So trying to do activities and markets abroad, and then all of a sudden you see that they weren't so successful, or, you know, that you didn't manage to get the impact you thought you would get, is quite tough, right? It's quite tough. You're managing big budgets to do this. So it was a complicated thing to do, but we learned really fast, really well. You know, having 45 people around the world, communication was flowing all the time, and you learned from what mistake from another one, and what was working in one market, you could apply it to the other. It was a great, great professional experience. And I think trying to grow, the biggest drawback was the competition. We were the first ones active. But then, funny enough, we had clubs that became very active as well. For example, PSG started to do a lot of things. Bayern Munich started to do a lot of things. The Bundesliga by itself started to do a lot of things. Premier League is true that them as a league, they don't step into growing their brand or growing their operations. They understood from the beginning that their clubs are big enough for them to help them grow, right? Which is the stage where La Liga wants to step in now. That's why this whole La Liga Impulso program, right? Obviously all the Premier League clubs as well had activities, not only commercial activities, that is always important side of it, but also fan-based activities that you started becoming a comparison, right, in the market. What he did, and now you do this, and it wasn't as successful, and so on. So that was quite complicated as well, especially there were markets. North America is a completely dominated market by the Premier League. And Brazil, for example, is, if we're talking about international properties, we're talking about the NBA. Surprisingly, not a lot of people know this, but the NBA has a lot of fan base in Brazil. This is because
I didn't know basketball was so popular there.
Yeah, but not only this, because of the whole urban mentality in Brazil the urban mentality. So it's more of a lifestyle that the NBA is selling in Brazil, and they have great projects. If you're interested in it, check it out, because it's really, really cool. And so you're competing with the international ones, but then let's not forget the national ones. So it's me, La Liga, trying to develop a business and a fan base in Colombia, let's say again. But you have the Colombian League as well, which is the first one for everyone, right? So there was that institutional side with the Colombian League, but obviously the Colombian League knew you were here to take a bit of the pie, right? it's not an easy job, but great things were done, and the growth of La Liga in the past 5 years demonstrates that great things were done.
What would you say is the perception of the Premier League in La Liga? You've kind of hinted to it's a league that La Liga is aspiring to at least be in some sense, but would you say you guys are kind of just trying to be where the Premier League are or adapt a little bit? Or is there also a sense of resentment towards the Premier League? Like, what's the perception in general?
No resentment. And I think this is, I think anyone you talk to in the Spanish football would say the same. Huh? Everyone looks up to the Premier League. We all understand it's the biggest league in the world today. Numbers say so. And not only this, but you talk to the public and people say this. Yeah. But we're not very far off, right? And you can analyze this in many different ways. So you can analyze the sports side. If you analyze the sports side, it's true that we have Real Madrid, which helps Spanish football a lot, right?
And Barca.
And Barca, the past, yeah, if you look at 10 years, right? The past 3 years or so on, probably Real Madrid. But you also have a lot of Europa League titles, right? And not only Sevilla. Titles, exactly, Sevilla, Villarreal. Yeah, let's not talk about Sevilla today. but not only this, but also very good positions in Europa League and Champions League, right? Lots of teams that have been competing. It is true in the past couple of seasons, Champions League, not so much Europa League, but Champions League, if you look at the quarterfinals, there have not been so many Spanish teams as there were maybe 6 years ago. This is true. I think football is also changing. I think 10 years ago we were talking about this whole, you know, tiki-taka and good football and keep the possession and so on. I think football is now becoming more physical, and this obviously hurts the talent maybe that Spanish football has always tried to work with. And I think so I think this is what's happening, but that does not mean English football is better than Spanish football. I think on the sports side, we can say we have a great, great competition going on. And if you put the sixth of the Premier League against the sixth of the Spanish League, I think it would be a great battle, right?
Everybody expires against Betis or something.
For example, right? I think it would be a great game, no? So I don't think on the sports side we have a lot to say. I'm talking about more the product. The audiovisual product is a very good product. They have done many things for many years before La Liga. Bear in mind, La Liga have been realizing they had to create themselves and grow internationally and create themselves into an audiovisual product for 7 years only, 6 years. Premier League has been doing this for 15 years. 15 years ago, you could see people in India and China wearing Manchester United or Arsenal or Chelsea shirts. You saw this, right? And if you saw it of Madrid and Barca, they were fake. Their shirts wouldn't even get a rifle, right? So they have been doing it for a longer time, and they knew what they had to do exactly, and they did it really well.
Premier League was a focus from the get-go.
Yeah, and they have been doing a great job there. I think in the past years, maybe we have cut the gap quite a lot. And good job we started doing this, because if not, the gap would have been huge by now. Internationally, I think Premier League was working earlier. But if we go to what a lot of people say, which is money, right? Premier League is definitely better because they spend a lot more money. Well, here we have to put so many things.
Bournemouth outspent the whole of La Liga in January.
Yeah, but there's so many things here to put into analysis. And I understand that football today, obviously you need big budgets to have the best players, right? Because the prices keep growing. But I think that's the fact that Spanish football is not spending so much money, but is still being able to compete, right? I think it says a lot about Spanish football. But if you put into analysis the economic side of it, if we talk about audiovisual rights in Premier League are valued way more than the Spanish audiovisual rights. We have to look into population, number one, right? We have to look into national and international. Right? So if we look into national audiovisual rights, the one sold for the UK, we have to look into population. There's a bigger population than in Spain, which means a broadcaster will pay more because they have more households, and people to impact, right? That's number one. We also have to look into TV penetration, paid TV penetration, right? The paid TV in the UK is so common. You would go into any house in the UK and everyone has paid TV. In Spain, it's not so common. In Spain, we actually have a big problem called piracy. People, we have a lot of piracy problems in Spain. So there are not so many people paying for pay TV in Spain as there is in the UK. And if you take it another step forward, we have to look at economic variables, right? So the economy in Spain is quite worse than the economy in the UK. So the average UK person is ready to pay more for pay TV rights, or you know, for the football package, than they actually are in Spain. So if you put all of this together, obviously the value of the audiovisual right in Spain is a lot less than the value of the audiovisual right in the UK.
Yeah, and that's where the key factors.
Exactly, and that's where the biggest gap lies. If you look at the differences between the national and the international audiovisual rights sale, the national between Premier League and Liga is huge. International Premier League is also on top, but the gap is not so big. We're there, right? We're competing, and that in the audiovisual side of it, you have to take into account in the international show, you have to take into account the fact that Premier League were internationalizing before. That they're now being able to spend to grab those interesting players, the best players from the different markets.
Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah, they've always embraced foreign players, foreign
exactly, and
all of
that means all the audience is there now. So there are many things to take into account. I think,
yeah, for sure.
Saying that the Premier League, that La Liga is as good as the Premier League, is a mistake. Premier League is the best league in the world, but you have many things to analyze, right? So
yeah, no question.
Yeah.
On the topic of, you know, TV broadcast rights and so on, two weeks ago I interviewed Matt Slater, who's a journalist at The Athletic, or reporter at The Athletic, Premier League expert and so on, and we discussed TV distribution rights and, you know, in England versus Spain and other European markets. And in Spain we see, you know, literally like Barcelona, Atletico, Real Madrid, they take up around, you know, 1/3 of all the TV revenues, while in the Premier League, the team that finishes top only earns 1.6 to 1.8 times as much money as the team that finishes bottom. Mm-hmm. A way narrower distribution of TV revenues. Can you give us some insight into discussions regarding, you know, TV revenue discussions in Spain and also for Betis as well?
Yeah. So TV revenues in Spain are distributed in different ways. So you have to analyze the classification, the ranking, obviously, in the season. You have to analyze the audience, TV audience. You have to analyze how many people go to your stadium. You have to analyze your social media audience. So there's a sort of formula, right, that you decide how many lies on one or the other. And obviously, if you analyze four things I just said, ranking in the table, TV audience, how many people go to your stadium, and your social media audience, especially the last one, Real Madrid and Barca, they go off the roof, right? So they deserve more of the pie than the rest of the teams. Now, why is this happening, right? I think that is the question. Because both Real Madrid and Barca, they are quite against the whole La Liga movement. La Liga thinks about a collectivity, thinks about...
And they don't want it to be a centralized discussion.
Yeah, they don't want it to be a centralized discussion, exactly. Today, audiovisual rights are centralized in Spain, and they didn't used to be. So both Real Madrid and Barca say that La Liga is growing thanks to them, because really without them, La Liga wouldn't be growing as much. And the way I see it is well, that would happen really if Real Madrid and Barca played in any league, because Real Madrid and Barca are probably two of the biggest teams in the world.
Yeah.
So maybe some people would say the top two, others would say top three, and they're in the top three, top five, but they're always there, right? So yeah, no, everywhere they go, they would drive TV revenue and they would make that league grow. So it's more of a fact of, do you want Spanish league to grow or not, right? And I think Premier League have that very interiorized, and we only have to see the whole Super League movements where all of the Premier League clubs came together and said, "We think we are, you know, the Super League, the Premier League. So we don't want to join." Obviously, though, there were some conversations, we all know, right, between some of the clubs. It's an interesting movement, but in the end, they said they didn't want to join. And on the other side, you have Spanish teams that are the ones that actually are pushing to the for this to happen.
Yeah, they're right? still. I think it's.
It's still on. It's still
Real,
on.
Real, Barca, and Juve, who are the exactly. three clubs, were still in it.
So obviously they don't have a collectivity mentality. So this means that when you sit down and you centralize all division rights, when you have to distribute them, it's Madrid and Barca that say, okay, you want to distribute it, you want to centralize, let's do it. Obviously all the teams are against me, so I'm going to have to say okay, but at least let's distribute it in a fair way where I will always get more of the pie as long as I get the biggest audiences, the biggest social media numbers, I keep my stadium full, and I keep up on the table. And that's been happening for the past 5-10 years, right? They're always up there, Madrid and Barca, their stadiums are full, they keep on growing on social media, they're two of the biggest sports properties in social media today, and we see that they drive the audiences in Spanish football today. So at the end, the pie is distributed more towards these big teams. But it is true that La Liga would love for the distribution to be more more equitative, and this would definitely make that the 17th classified in the Spanish league would be able to compete in transfer market with maybe not the 17th of the Premier League, but maybe the 20th or even the first of the Championship, because also we have the Championship, where here I'd talk about the Championship, I'd put in the factors of the national audiovisual rights, the whole idea of how big the UK is, how many people have pay TV at home, how many people are ready to pay and how much they can pay in UK, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Obviously, the second league, they only think about national, they don't think about international, but their national industry is strong and they have a lot of following as well. So that's the situation. No, the reality today, and let's be honest, is that the third classified in championship, earns as much as the 17th classified in the Spanish first division.
Yeah, wow.
It's quite astonishing, you know? But
Yeah, that is pretty astonishing. Especially considering how much less you earn in the championship than the Premier League as well.
But also we have another thing I wanna touch just to defend a little bit more my industry, the Spanish one. which is the economic control. I'm sure you've heard about this.
Yeah.
Which
all the drama about Barcelona over the past year, right? Yeah, all related to that.
So really here what La Liga is saying is, how can a football club, because let's not forget 15 years ago, many of the football clubs in Spain were in huge debt. Huge debt. They should disappear as companies. So when La Liga became as strong as it is, especially when Javier Tebas stepped in, there was a lot of controls, especially on the economic side, coming into the conversation. And today, what the law says, the economic control says, it's internal law for the clubs only. It says that you can only spend as much as you earn.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. How can you spend more if you haven't earned it, right? But obviously, in the earning side, that there are some rules where you have to follow. And obviously, if an investor comes in and invests, fine, you have more money. But they only allow the investor to step into with X amount of money, because they believe, and it's happened in Spanish football before, let's see the Malaga case, okay? Malaga, they got bought by a Middle Eastern investor, and he became the president of the club, and he started buying lots of players, and he made Malaga a very, very competitive team in Spain, and not only in Spain but European competitions as well. They landed Champions League, and they reached quarterfinals of Champions League against Borussia Dortmund.
And like 2013,
exactly. It was incredible. With Isco, Van Nistelrooy, Joaquim was playing there, Cazorla. It was an incredible team.
Yeah, that was a great
Batista,
team.
It was an incredible team. Yeah. And then what happened is, this investor, he had other investment interests, as everyone does that steps into football, in the country, and especially in the city of Malaga, and the plans that he had were thrown down. So then he said, okay, if I'm not going to be able to do anything here in Malaga that I want to do, then I'm going to step out of the club. He stepped out of the club. He cut the money flow, and all of a sudden the club did not have enough money to pay the players. And this meant the club became in huge debt, it had to become into like the authorities had to step into the management of the club, and the club today is in second division and is fighting to not fall into third division in Spain. It's actually today it's they might get relegated from second division. Imagine how much of a harm that situation did, that only 10 years ago you were fighting to step into the semi-final of the Champions League, and today you're fighting to actually fall from professional football in Spain. So this is what La Liga is trying to avoid with these type of rules. And it is true that I have to be honest. It's quite surprising that a club like Chelsea all of a sudden is able to spend as much as in winter, as much as Italian League, Spanish League, and I think it was German League together. Only one club.
Yeah.
it's quite daft. Does that mean Chelsea is making that amount of money? No, it does not mean Chelsea is making that amount of money. It means that someone has come in, wants to invest crazy, and obviously has a very good financial advisor that allows to, you know, for the payments to be done in the future and to manage some money today, right? But this can mean that in the future, these clubs that are spending so much money that they don't actually have, they can be seen in trouble in the future. Maybe not, but that's what La Liga defends.
Yeah, it's a risk. We have to see what happens.
It's a risk.
What's happening to Man City as well with those financial violations and so on. So.
Exactly. Yeah. It's really money you don't actually have, right? Because football does make a lot of money, but it only just makes enough money, right? Let's bear in mind, Real Madrid has been the club for the past 3-4 years that has made most money in football, and they are not spending the amounts of money that Premier League clubs spend.
Yeah, right. All right, but back to Betis. What would you say are the biggest challenges that Real Betis face in this rapidly changing world of football?
Well, I think Betis is very, very loved, a very loved club, but here nationally, right, in Spain. We are the fourth club with the biggest stadium, 60,000 people. Not a lot of people know this.
Which you're renovating as well.
Right? Which we're renovating currently.
Is it a new one or just renovating the existing?
No, it's renovating, but it's a big renovation. Yeah, it's going to become a world-class stadium. So we got 60,000 people in our that can fit our stadium. And we are currently the first one in Spain with a percentage of attendance to the stadium. Obviously, this does not mean we have the most people. Yeah, this does not mean we have the most people coming to our stadium. But we always have around 55,000 people in our stadium. 55,000 out of the 60,000. Okay. Obviously, Real Madrid have an 85,000 stadium. Barca have a 95,000 stadium. So obviously, maybe they have more than the 55,000 people there.
Yeah, of course.
But out of the percentage capacity, we are number one. Being the fourth in the biggest stadium. Quite a big stadium. 60,000 is quite big. So this already says how much people love the club, right? And how people identify themselves with the club. There's a thing called beticismo, right? Which is it's a lifestyle, as people say. It's the way I live my life. My life is I live my way of life as Betis. That's the way I live my life. So that's what people
is that how you live. Say.
Oh, let's not step into that. I'm a football fan. I can't position myself. I will say I am more of a Betis fan today than I was before, and I will always defend the values of this club everywhere I go, because I am really seeing a football club. I am really seeing what football can actually make in people's lives and what people can actually feel about a football club, right? And let's do a comparison with a very successful club in Spain, for example, Villarreal, right? Villarreal is probably maybe well known internationally and nationally because of their results. But really, you go to their stadium.
It's
done really well. But you go to their stadium and it's a small stadium that is not very full, where people do not engage a lot with the club because they don't have that history. They don't have that club lifestyle that surrounds, you know, everything that the families and the people that follow the club do, right?
It's a small city as well, right?
It's a very small city. So it's complicated to create this, you know, this whole Betis this Villarreal community, or the Betis community that has been created and that exists is, I think, the big differentiation that Betis can provide as a product. And this is today in Spain, right? But let's tell our story out there. We have so many things to tell historically about the city itself. On social media, we're the fourth club in engagement today in Spanish league as well. So people really follow us and like us and want to know more about us. So I think the biggest challenge today of the club is to all the good work that has been created nationally, not break it, carry on being true to its values because it's what has made it such a good product, but try and translate this abroad and become a global club, right? Mm-hmm. I think this is the big challenge they have on the business side. I think on the sports side, there's the challenge of carrying on competing in Europe that like we've been carrying on competing for the past 5 years. This is important. This consistency is what makes you today, gives you the possibility to become a big club because it's Europe that pays the best amount of money and it's Europe that positions you both as a brand, as a football club. So if you carry on out there and you have good results, it will make you grow. And also there's a bit of a challenge at the moment, which is selling players. There's a lot of people say about the economic situation of Betis, where Betis should be able to spend more money than they actually are spending in the transfer markets. And the problem is because of their results in European competitions in Spain and so on. But the problem is Betis has not been able to sell a good player for quite a few seasons. And if you look at, this is something that no one really understands why, but just no one has come along trying to buy a good player from us for a few times it's bad luck. It's bad management maybe of the contracts. I can't really step into this because it's more of a sports situation. But it is true that, looking at the whole revenue spectrum of the club, we depend a lot in the ticketing, in the whole social side of the club and in the commercial side of the club, but not so much in the revenue of the transfer market, where many of the clubs, if you look at their revenues, we're talking about audiovisual, transfer, and then we look into commercial, ticketing, so on. Well, here we have a big gap where we have to start selling players. And this does not mean I want to sell the whole squad. I don't understand. But you get what I mean, right? We need to create our players into products, and we have to make these big sales that other clubs do and that allow them to grow. Let's talk about Real Sociedad, for example. Real Sociedad have been doing a great job in the past 3 years in the football side, but a similar job in the sports results as Betis, maybe, right? Competing in similar
they're ahead of
competitions.
You in the league, right?
They're currently fourth. We're currently sixth, but we're just 3 points away. So we're fighting for the same position. Exactly, we're fighting for Champions League, and if we don't get there, we obviously want to keep the Europa League. But we've been having a similar situation. The big difference is that, for example, just this summer, they sold Isak, their striker. Yeah. I think it was
71 million euros.
71 million euros. You know?
Yeah, to Newcastle.
You know what 71 million euros is for a club like Betis?
Huge.
So this is what we need. We need that little extra push. So those, I think, would be the two challenges.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And final question. I'm sure there's a lot of football fans out there who'd love to have the type of role that you have, working for a football club or, like your past role working in the league. Do you have any tips on kind of getting into the business side of football, getting into that world?
Well, I got to be honest, I was quite lucky because the moment I had to step into the industry was the exact moment the industry was opening up, right? So if today you want to step in the industry, you have quite a lot more of competition because a lot of people have seen cases similar as mine and that dedicated their beginning of the career to finance, to consulting, to whatever other business material, and they have always, wanted to dedicate themselves to sports, and now have decided to step into it. And obviously there's a lot more competition, right? But my advice would be to stay connected. It's very important. The sports world is very, very small, way smaller than what people think. There are X amount of properties because it's the properties there are. There's no more. It's not like a let's step into tech,
right?
Starting
a business away.
Exactly. It's let's step into tech. And all of a sudden there are 200 new tech companies. This doesn't happen in sports. Yeah. There are X amount of properties. And
there's 20 La Liga clubs.
Exactly. And there's one league.
So
you have to stay connected because there's a lot of movement within the industry. And this is very common. It's happening today and it will happen even more. Working in one club but moving to another. Working for the league but moving to a club. In my case, working for a club but stepping into the league. Agencies that have provided services for clubs, leagues, and step into the club league. I think it's very important to stay connected and to know who's who and to understand that how structures work internally in the sports properties. I'd also say today there are many that I didn't have the opportunity to have. There are many educational alternatives for sports management. It is true I took a small master's, but I took that master's. It was more of an executive program. It wasn't even a master's. And I took it whilst I was working. And that was the only alternative there was in the market at that time. Either this or the Real Madrid master in the Universidad Europea here in Spain. Mm. Those were the only two alternatives. Today you have many other alternatives. La Liga have launched their La Liga Business School. Many clubs have associated with universities. For example, Betis, we associated with the biggest university in Seville called Loyola, and we have a master's ourselves. Johan Cruyff Institute has grown here in Spain as well. I know FIFA, UEFA are doing their educational movements as well. So there's a lot of alternatives out there, and these alternatives will provide you very good insights of a very changing world. The football industry changes a lot. As much as the law changes, the whole commercial perspective of the industry has to change as well. So you have to keep updated, and these educational alternatives will keep you updated, and they will make you connected, because it's us, the workers of the industry, that give lessons in these masters, and this will allow you to be connected and to know people out there, and to not lose faith, because I think a lot of people, you know, might think, you know, it's hard to get there. It's a lot of competition. Don't lose faith, because it's an industry that's growing, that is trying to be more professionalized each time, and that is looking for young people that are experts in different materials. And you know, the opportunities will arise. And I think that's the last thing I wanted to say, is being an expert in a material. That's very important, because if you just want to be an expert in the football industry or football material, you will see yourself in competition with other people that, for example, are experts in social media. Okay, they might have not had experience in the football industry, but they are experts in their material. And the football industry, what it's asking now is to professionalize. So they're looking for the best professionals in different materials, right? You have to understand.
Less of a generalist, but more
exactly,
of a specialist.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. I'd say this is something very important. All those specialists have to understand the industry. So they probably will have to take an educational side, will have to be connected and updated. They do have to know what's happening and understand it. It wouldn't be like someone who's working in pharma, for example, right? Pharmaceuticals. Mm. For the best social media manager in pharmaceuticals won't end up working in a football club like this. He has to educate himself and adapt himself to a very complicated industry. But it is true, you have to become an expert in something. So join your passion for sport with a specialization that you enjoy. Let it be digital, let it be commercial, let it be marketing, any of those. Yeah. And of course, if anyone has any questions and you know, you want to connect me with them, just let me know and I'll be happy to speak.
Yeah, cool.
You can find
me
LinkedIn.
Great
as well.
Advice. Thanks, Lame. Thanks for joining.
No, thank you for the invite, Tra. Happy to speak to you. Happy to let you guys know what's happening from my perspective, and I'll be looking forward to hearing out some other people you invite for sure. Thanks for the opportunity.
All right, mate. Have a good day.
Mucho betis.
Bye-bye.